Hi, I'm Stacey Whittle, and welcome to Teoti Talks. Today we are interviewing Nancy Conrad, a woman who defies description, a woman who I am honored to call my friend. I usually don't start out interviews asking about how we met, but I think in this case we should, so.
Well, it's a great story. You want to start the prequel?
Sure. So Nancy and I both belong to a leadership group, and we were both at an event. We hadn't met each other yet, and Nancy found out that I lived in D.C. and asked if she could have a ride back, and I said, where do you live? And she said, the Watergate, and I said, great, I'm going in that direction anyway. So we get into my little Fiat, stick shift Fiat, and we're driving, and she asked me, what do you do? And at that time, I was working on a joint NASA-USAID project on climate change. And she said, oh, I have some familiarity with NASA. And I was like, oh, yes, everybody's brother, uncle, or, you know, somebody works for NASA. And there was a pause. And she said, yeah, but my husband was the third man to walk on the moon.
That's when your stick shift went into Mach 7. You were shifting so fast, I thought we were going to spin out.
I think I actually pulled over to the side of the road.
It was like pretty much drunk.
Pete Conrad!
Yeah.
She's like, yes.
Yeah.
And we have been friends ever since.
Right.
And I think it's an important introduction because I, through you, Nancy, have learned so much about entrepreneurship.
Ooh.
And I just am happy to tell as many people as I can about all of the wonderful things you're doing and all of the profound changes you're making in the world.
Thank you.
Which is what Teoti Talks is really about. It's about interviewing people who are not just change makers, but who are kind and compassionate and who see the world as something to be fixed in a way that's positive. And anyway, so how would you describe yourself?
Other than short? I don't really know how I would describe myself. I guess I'm a change agent. I've been dedicated my whole life to transforming the way young people learn. Very engaged and involved in person-centric, whether it's a student or one of my mentees who are young adults, educating from the inside out. So really, the program that we have created helps students understand how to think and how to learn. And the vehicle to do that is to invite them to solve global and local challenges in categories. We do health, aerospace, of course, it's our heritage, energy, cybersecurity. We work with the Foundation for a Smoke-Free World. We want kids to be able to share with other young people. Don't even start, don't go there. And then, by the way, if you're a farmer and you're going to have to convert your property to a different crop, what are you going to do about that and how do you do it? And then there's one more category we have this year, which is very interesting. It's a company called Smart Technologies. It took me about 2 days to find the CEO and I got him on the phone and I said, here's what we do and we'd love to work with you. They do interactive whiteboards. And so we have we call it the No Box Toolbox, which is what everybody else would call curriculum, but I don't use the word because I just think it's old and boring, and that means you're going to take a test, and there's no test. So, you know, fundamentally, we have talked about in-the-box thinking and out-of-the-box thinking, and our students have no box. They can solve any challenge they want, any way they want. So I saw this whiteboard. Long story short on that, they're working with us this year, and we've invited students to create ed tech. So who better to create technologies for the classroom than the consumer of education? And by the way, that's the students.
Yeah. Wow. Let's take a step back and talk about why.
The why.
And what. Tell us a little bit more about the Conrad
Sure.
Foundation, the Conrad Challenge, and how you went from being a teacher
mm-hmm.
to an author to an entrepreneur to a mother to...
I'm also a grandmother. That's the best
okay,
part.
Okay, I didn't want to say it.
But, that's the best part.
Yeah, I think a little bit of the history of the why.
Sure. So, as I mentioned, I've worked in education all my life. And then I had the incredible good luck to marry a unbelievable human being. I mean, a man that was a figure of American history, but a superbly human. Now, what does that mean? I could take 4 hours to describe that to you. A guy who really wore his celebrity in a very humble way. And he was, I guess you would say, my master teacher. Pete was working on the commercialization of space. There's a video that I found recently, and it says, "The moon, I've been there. Next time it's your turn." Mm-hmm. And his concept was not only to take us into the exploration of deep space, but to be able to take us from, say, California to Italy in 45 minutes, traveling in low Earth orbit. So he was working very hard on commercializing vehicles so we could all get a ride. In 1999, July 8th of 1999, Pete was in a motorcycle accident that ended up costing his life. For a number of years, and I still do, I work in patient safety. Turns out, you know, Pete probably didn't have to die. We don't know for sure. I never hired lawyers or did any litigation. And oddly enough, the Institute of Medicine report on To Err Is Human came out right after Pete was killed. And what it did was put a spotlight on patient safety and medical error and how many people actually die through medical error. Docs don't mean to do bad things. Nurses don't mean to do bad things, but they're human beings. So I've worked in patient safety all these years, still work in that. We do a PETE award. You're going to love this. It stands for Performance Excellence Transfer Enterprise. We had to really think through to find that one. Yeah. And so we're actually giving 4 awards this year on that. Finally sat down for 5 minutes, and when I came up for air, I thought, wow, what a perfect way to combine his legacy and his story, which I will share with you, and my passion for transforming education. So Pete was a young man that had a little problem reading and spelling. So they hadn't quite invented dyslexia yet. They just titled it stupidity. And so they threw him out of a very prestigious school. And his mom ended up taking him to a little school in upstate New York. And the headmaster at the school saw something in him and took him under his wing. And Pete ended up with a scholarship to Princeton. Compliments of the Navy and Princeton. And he was learning how to fly about that time, and that was his real passion. So he became an aeronautical engineer. Well, let's see. Likes to fly, don't have to read or spell. It was perfect for him. So then when he became a test pilot after he graduated, and when President Kennedy put out the word for a few good men, Pete said, "Yay, I'm there. I like to fly. I don't care where you go." And he ended up with 4 flights in space. Gemini 5, which proved we could be in space for 8 days. Gemini 11, which was working on rendezvous and also high altitude. And then Neil and Buzz landed Apollo 11 4 miles from their landing site, which really could have spoiled their day. So NASA decided, oh, we better do a pinpoint landing on the moon. So that was Pete and Al Bean and Dick Gordon were tasked to do a pinpoint landing on the moon, which it's really pretty funny. They had sent up a surveyor that took photographs of the lunar surface, and then they would send those photographs back to Johnson Space Center, where they would make papier-mâché models of the surface of the moon. And there was this crater that they were calling the Snowman Crater. It was a Copernican ray, which was a deep impact, kind of a hole in the moon, if you will. And that's where they decided Pete now should land. So by George, that's exactly where they landed. So pinpoint landing on the moon on Apollo 12, and then he flew Skylab, which was actually our first space station. Damaged at launch. He hung out on a tether in space, yanking away at this thing to break it loose so the solar array would open and the lab would be cooled. And so they could continue to fly. Otherwise, it was going to be the end of the program. And he said when he was out there, he wasn't sure if the tether was going to hold or he was going to be the first arrow in space. Thank heaven it held. So for that, he was awarded a Congressional Space Medal of Honor. Then he went to work in the aerospace industry after a very brief stint flying a desk, which he didn't like, at the early days of cable television. Yeah, for our friend Bill Daniels, who actually was the father of cable. It became American Telecommunications, which ended up becoming Time Warner. And in a way, it would have been good if Pete had stayed flying that desk. It would have made a lot of difference. But he ended up back in aerospace. That was his love. He went to work for McDonnell Douglas. And then he flew the first experimental single-stage-to-orbit rocket. It was called the DCX, and it was designed to fly 4 flights. It flew 14. And from that vehicle really came the birthplace of the whole commercial space industry. So what Branson, Musk, and Bezos are doing today really stands on Pete's shoulders. So the end of all of that, and to pull it all together for you, I went, here's a kid, an educator takes him under his wing, the kid gets a moonshot. That's what we're going to do. So we give kids a moonshot.
Wow.
Wow.
Thinking about solutions and about the whole thing about STEM education, and I don't think really a lot of people know what it means, and people just throw around the term, like, there's STEM education, STEM for girls. How is what you're doing unique? How can I or anyone else learn more? Mm-hmm. How can other kids who may not be exposed to this particular program become involved?
Wow. So you want to go one by one? So STEM stands for science, technology, engineering, and math. We really talk much more about sustainability than we do STEM, because now STEM is sort of kitschy. STEM, STEAM, X-STEM, STEM-X, blah, 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 blah. We're talking about sustainability, about offering young minds and young learners the opportunity to design their future. So these are kids that create commercially viable solutions. So we've married innovation, education, and entrepreneurship, and brought to these young kids the opportunity to design the future, to solve challenges. It's another word I don't use, problems. Problems is negative. These are challenges. They're solvable. And so our kids do everything from stopping hand tremors with a device to systems for finding lost objects on International Space Station. One of our students that's been with us for a while, she created an app to diagnose diabetic retinopathy. Just got approved by the FDA. She got early admission to Harvard, and she's rocking it. I mean, she is really rocking it. Our kids end up, some of them get patents, some of them deploy their products. The students own them, we don't own them. And what happens is, the whole protocol of this is, we put out our challenge and we invite these kids to come into our platform to create a 1-minute video and talk about the idea that they are trying to solve, whatever challenge they're working on. And from there they enter into the funnel, if you will, and they create business plans, market studies, visual representations of their product ideas. And on the back side of that are judges and subject matter experts who work with a rubric to evaluate those kids' proposals. Then the ones that get through this whole big funnel are invited to our finals, which happens at Kennedy Space Center. And there they present in real time in front of judges. And the judges come from the Navy, from the CIA, from NASA, from top companies, entrepreneurs. We've even had a co-founder of Match.com as one of our judges. And then the winners are chosen. They get a big honking medallion. We used to give them money. And we found out it was too much not to do anything and not enough to really do what they wanted to do. And I don't want kids dropping out of school and growing companies. Are there companies that could expand their ideas and commercialize them? Yes. And has that happened? Yes. And because there's patent awards and things of that nature, NASA gives an award, the Navy gives an award. This year working with Dell, the kids are going to get computers, Revo sunglasses, and P.S., the coolest part of this year, which I have to share with you, it's the 50th anniversary of the moon landing coming up. We are going to take all of the students' proposals, photos, names, and it'll end up in a little teeny tiny wafer, and it's going to go to space.
Wow.
It will come back, and it will be installed in a museum exhibit at the Museum of Flight in Seattle, which is where Pete's collection resides. And it'll be called the Moonwalker Capsule, and under it, it will say, "We've come in peace for all humankind." And we'll collect these, and over the years, and as we go back to the lunar surface, they'll be taken to the moon to honor youth on Earth. So all the kids get to go on a ride to space sort of virtually, shall we say. Yeah, isn't that cool? So it's interesting because what happens, and we've seen this grow and grow and grow over the years, teachers will use this competition as their way to teach science. We've been doing some stuff that's right.
There's one thing you didn't mention, and that is giving kids meaning in their, I think people, you know, we're always struggling for who are we and what is our place in the world, and it sounds like this gives people the opportunity to figure out why they exist and to feel like they're part of something bigger. And I think that's another area that you could really help the, especially the public schools, understand.
Well, because packed into this are all of the social emotional pieces, the leadership skills, the collaboration skills, the communication skills. These kids all work in teams, 2 to 5 in a team. So all of those skill sets are packed in to what happens with this. They become community. They get connected to each other. They stay in touch. Sometimes they form collaborations. We've even seen mergers and acquisitions. We had some water systems, kids that created a way to take styrofoam and degrade it. It's non-degradable, but they degraded it into carbon crystals for water purification. We had a team of kids doing water purification. They're in 9 countries. Voila, M&A.
How can people find out more?
So we are Conrad Challenge. We're on the internet. We're on social media.
Yeah. What's next for these kids?
Well, as I mentioned, some of them actually do get patents and deploy their products. All of them go on to university, by the way. Clarkson University is working with us again this year. They have incubators and accelerators at their school. And we've worked with them some years ago, and it just got reignited, if you will. And they're offering scholarships to our students, so that's going to be a very interesting piece that we're working on. Also, I would like to find a platform to tell their stories and to connect with each other, and it's something we're working on. That's kind of our next gen of this.
And that's what we are doing at Teoti. I mean, we like to say we move the needle for our clients, and we do that through website development or branding, but we also are working very specifically now on helping organizations and individuals and companies tell their stories better. It's surprising how hard it is for people to tell a story, even though, especially if you have kids, every night it's tell me a story. And we do. But then we get into the workplace and all of a sudden we feel like, oh, I can't do this anymore. It has to be laden with numbers and it has to be laden with data. And I think we forget the power of story lies within us. It's something that we have evolved to be as humans. And I love the idea of you trying to build a platform for these students to share what they're doing in a way that goes beyond funders or, you know, advocates, but to the people who need to hear those messages. Right. And like you said, this is not just about, you know, rich kids or poor kids or American kids. It's about all kids.
It's interesting. People ask me, do we work with underserved? And I say, of course. All students are underserved. All of them.
Right.
And that's because, you know, people have been working on reforming our education system. Well, there's nothing to reform. It has to transform. And so I think part of the story that we will tell through these students and their projects and their products and the deployment and their next steps and the alumni and where they end up is how that transformation has affected young people, and then it affects the workplace. When you really look at it, Stacy, we're building an innovative workforce. How else are we going to sustain the knowledge-based economy? We have to do it.
Well, thank you so much, Nancy.
My pleasure.
It's been a real pleasure talking to you.
My pleasure, Miss
Stacy. I'll see you tomorrow.
Yes, ma'am. We'll party. You can cut that.
Or not.